The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Egypt prepares a selective opening of its Gaza border, though not to Palestinians, ahead of an expected Israeli offensive. Plus, economists turn optimistic on the U.S. economy, lowering the chances of a recession.
This is the first time that that probability has been below 50% for about a year and a half.
And drugstore chain Rite Aid becomes the latest American retailer to file for bankruptcy. It's Monday, October 16th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin today in Gaza, where a border crossing with Egypt is expected to open, letting an estimated 500 to 600 Americans to leave the enclave. As we await further details on that, some 2 million Palestinian residents of Gaza remain unable to leave as they brace for an Israeli ground offensive. WSJ reporter Will Malden has been on a nonstop trip around the Middle East over the weekend with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and that trip is continuing today with Blinken returning to Israel. Will, I can hear the motorcade behind you, so let's get right to it. Take us into the situation at the Gaza-Egypt border. How did this deal come about, and who, besides Washington and Cairo, helped to get this done?
That's right. Well, there are a lot of players in this deal. In addition to Washington and Cairo, obviously Israel is playing a role. Hamas and its interlocutors, including Qatar, the UN. So there are a lot of moving pieces. That's why nothing is totally definite yet. But we did have Secretary Blinken meeting with Egyptian President al-Sisi yesterday, and he made the point that humanitarian aid is going to flow in and the border is going to open for people who want to go out, at least some people, such as Americans who are trapped there. So we did have guidance this morning from the U.S. Embassy in Israel saying, make your way south, or make your way to the border, and the reports that we expect that to open. We're picking up reports at the moment that it's not quite open yet. That could change at any moment.
What is expected of that? A border crush? Americans allowed through, others not? That sounds potentially dicey.
Right. Egypt has broad concerns, and they say it's a red line. There are security concerns about letting a lot of folks coming out of Gaza at a time when Israel is going to be trying to hunt down Hamas fighters. So there are real limits on what Egypt is willing to accept. But individual countries such as the U.S. are working out deals to get their nationals out. I think that's where this is going to start.
All right. So that's where things could start. But will they stop there, though? Might that border crossing open up further, given that there are so many people trying to leave Gaza now?
Sure, but there are a lot of different angles on this. For example, Hamas, which the U.S. has blamed for using civilians as human shields, does not want to let massive groups of Palestinians, Gazans, flee the Gaza Strip because that will leave them more exposed. You also have concerns, Palestinian concerns, about sort of being pushed out of their territory. So there are a lot of moving pieces. We expect humanitarian aid to flow in, and perhaps those who need to get out most or who have other countries sponsoring them to get out first, and we'll have to, you know, see what happens after that.
Will, what else has come of recent diplomacy? We've been speaking about escape routes from Gaza as if an intensification of this conflict is inevitable. Is it?
Well, nothing is certain at this point, but what we do know is that Israel does seem inclined to root out Hamas, and that means probably going in on the ground. And from what we hear from U.S. officials, that is likely to happen soon. And then the repercussions of that, either for Hezbollah, for the region, for groups aligned with Hamas and other Arab countries, could be large. That's a message that the U.S. has been bringing to Arab capitals, and they're working on ways to sort of contain that. At least the U.S. partners are.
We heard another American message last night from the president, speaking on 60 Minutes, saying an Israeli occupation of Gaza would be a big mistake. So expecting something, but also trying to make it clear what they would view as a step too far.
That's right. And certainly that's what I've heard from State Department officials on this tour. They're not willing to say much about what would come after Hamas, assuming Israel goes in and roots out Hamas. But Israel is not expected to rule that area, that's for sure. And from what I hear, Israel doesn't want to do that either. It's not looking for some kind of imperial occupation of this area, but it's focused on rooting out Hamas.
Well, on the U.S. being initially surprised by Israel's evacuation order for northern Gaza and the 24-hour deadline that they gave civilians to leave there, a deadline that ended around midnight on Saturday morning, it's now Monday morning, and we haven't seen an anticipated Israeli ground offensive. Do you get the sense Israel may be listening more to the U.S. and to concerns from others about how an offensive takes shape?
Well, we did have Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, saying yesterday that Israel had agreed to open up some water pipelines, aqueducts or lines that were headed into Gaza. And from what we hear, the U.S. was advocating that. Of course, we don't know how useful that will be on the ground because of the humanitarian situation there. And it certainly wasn't all of the water pipelines. So certainly the U.S. has stressed humanitarian concerns. We don't know what precisely they've demanded behind closed doors. But in general, I think Washington has given Israel some leeway to fight Hamas in the way it sees fit while taking into account the humanitarian situation. You know, from a civilian point of view, this is not, whatever side you're on, this is not a happy sort of a conflict. And that's on both sides of all the borders in the region. But it's something that's become a big concern for the United Nations, Secretary Guterres, as well as the U.S., but the U.S. is being a little bit more private about its concerns.
That was Wall Street Journal State Department reporter Will Malden. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And let us quickly touch on a few other updates this morning, including an increased death toll. More than 1,400 Israelis have now died since the Hamas assault began, while in Gaza, officials put the Palestinian death toll at 2,750. The number of U.S. citizens killed has also risen to 30, with 13 Americans remaining unaccounted for, according to the State Department. It is unclear whether all 13 are hostages in Gaza, but the effort to trace and release the 155 people abducted by Hamas is likely to be a focus if President Biden visits Israel later this week. Biden has been invited to meet with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and is said to be considering the trip. Meanwhile, Israel is continuing to monitor the risk of possible escalation on two fronts. First, along its northern border with Lebanon, where Israeli armed forces and Hezbollah engaged in a series of deadly clashes over the weekend. And second, in the West Bank, where violence has flared in recent days. That included an attack by Jewish settlers on Palestinians, as well as clashes between protesters and security forces, leading to fears that the situation could escalate into all-out confrontation between Palestinians and Israel. For continuing coverage throughout the day, check out our live blog at WSJ.com. Coming up, economists weigh in on the odds of a U.S. recession amid geopolitical tensions. That, plus a price check at the pump, and more after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Economists are growing increasingly bullish on the U.S. economy, expecting no recession and easing inflation. In the latest quarterly survey of economists by the Wall Street Journal, recession odds dropped from 54% in July to a hopeful 48%, marking the first sub-50% prediction in over a year. Journal economics reporter Harriet Torrey says there's lots to keep an eye on, but that overall, the outlook is improving.
So one thing that we have seen in recent weeks is a run-up in bond yields to their highest level since 2007. And more than 80% of economists did say that would increase the probability of a recession, although that didn't offset the other factors that are making a downturn less likely, strong economy and strong labor market. They did warn that there are some other developments that could cast shadows on the economy's prospects. So, for instance, the conflict between Israel and Hamas could have an impact on oil prices. There are other factors like the rundown in consumer savings since the pandemic. We are also in a high interest rate environment, which means tighter credit conditions, slowing income growth. And then we're seeing other things like the return of student debt payments in the US, which could have an impact on consumer spending. But overall, the economy has just been a lot stronger than economists expected.
Geopolitical concerns may be weighing on the minds of economists, but so far, fighting in the Middle East has not driven up gasoline prices, with AAA reporting Friday that a gallon of gas is nearly 6% cheaper for U.S. drivers compared to a month earlier. Oil reporter David Uberti told us that while traders expect that trend to continue, upside risks can't be ruled out.
this summer, the uptick in gasoline prices encouraged a lot of Americans to drive somewhat less across the country. That has pushed down prices recently, as well as the fact that in the U.S., refiners produce a somewhat cheaper blend of gasoline going into that part of the year. But in addition to that, obviously the situation in Israel is top of mind for traders right now. If Iran is embroiled in that conflict, and specifically if the U.S. decides to start enforcing its sanctions against Iranian crude more aggressively in response to the situation there, that will have a huge impact on global oil supplies.
Drugstore chain Rite Aid has filed for bankruptcy. Sunday's filing is the culmination of years of struggles, including a pair of failed mergers and costs that are tied to settling hundreds of federal, state, and private lawsuits alleging that it oversupplied prescription painkillers, litigation that's now on hold. Lenders are kicking in $200 million as the company embarks on a Chapter 11 restructuring, and Rite Aid's pharmacy unit could reportedly be sold at auction after attracting outside interest. Now to Poland, where a key election suggests that crucial support for Ukraine is likely to continue. The ruling Law and Justice Party fell short of the seats needed to form a government on Sunday, even after winning more votes than any other party, according to an exit poll. And WSJ correspondent Thomas Grove in Warsaw says that puts the opposition on track for a majority coalition led by former European Council President Donald Tusk.
We had seen a plateau in Polish-Ukrainian relations under this Law and Justice government. There was a sense in Warsaw that Kiev was ungrateful for the aid it had given it. And then Poland, in turn, also imposed a unilateral grain ban on Ukrainian grain. What happens now is a change of government, and that could very much revitalize ties and potentially put Poland back on the map of being the most ardent supporter of Ukraine going forward. Of course, there's questions ahead regarding the United States and what will happen down the road there politically, but this assures everybody that Poland will continue to play the role it's been playing.
X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, has begun to aggressively pitch political advertisers. Owner Elon Musk reversed a previous ban on political ads ahead of the U.S. election cycle, where candidates and advocacy groups will spend an estimated $10.2 billion, according to ad tracking firm Ad Impact. X is looking to turn around the revenue decline that it suffered since Musk's takeover and other changes to the platform, which prompted many brands to pull their ads. And today marks the start of the WSJ's annual Tech Live conference. The event's 10th year will see big names in artificial intelligence, crypto, and investing answering the most pressing questions in tech right now. And our live journalism news editor, Sarah Castellanos, says the prospects for AI are likely to dominate the week.
You'll also hear about what's in store for possible AI regulation in the U.S. and how AI could be used in the area of climate tech. And you're going to hear about a lot of the risks of artificial intelligence as well. So two of our guest speakers at Tech Live have written new books that talk about the real dangers of advanced AI systems. And one of the highlights of the event is that we'll hear straight from OpenAI founder Sam Altman and his CTO Mira Murati about where they think AI is headed.
WSJ subscribers can watch Tech Live sessions for free. To sign up or to subscribe, check out the links in our show notes. And that is what's news for Monday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant and Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
ServiceNow is the intelligent platform that puts AI to work for people across every corner of your business, all in a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow.